Hi, this is Lady C.
Hey, this is JT.
Welcome to The Critical Thought. In the upcoming episode, we're going to be talking to a couple that goes way back with the Jehovah's Witness religion. In fact, one of the individuals is a fourth generation Jehovah's Witness, and they have a story that they want to share about their own personal experience, how they became witnesses, how they met each other, and how they woke up.
You're listening to The Critical Thought, where we challenge our listeners to use critical thinking when examining the teachings of Jehovah's Witnesses.
So I want to introduce Lori and Dan. So Lori and Dan, welcome.
All right.
How you doing? Good.
Welcome. And I know Lori and I have been trading emails back and forth for a while because we've been trying to have her on since last year.
Yeah.
And we finally connected. And so we're so excited to have you on the program.
Yeah. Thanks for coming, guys.
Thanks for having us. Yeah.
Oh, you're welcome. So Lori, you want to kind of start out first and talk about how you became one of Jehovah's Witnesses, or because you're fourth generation, of course, you didn't become anything. You just were born into it.
Right. Already there.
Yeah. I basically have, I go back, my great grandparents. So they started studying in like 1920 something. And then my grandmother became a witness, obviously being not quite born in, but then her, she married my grandfather, who claimed to be of the anointed. When they made that announcement, I don't remember what year that was, when they said, who here is of the other sheep and who here is of, you know, the great, or of anointed. And so then my dad comes from them, and then me. So that's where I'm at in the stream of things, being the fourth generation. Like you said, you don't really have a choice when you're born in like that. And a lot is expected of you being born in. It's just expected that you're going to stay in the truth, quote unquote. And so I think I knew from being a little girl that it didn't feel right. I literally knew something was wrong deep inside. But when you're told over and over again that this is just the way it is, you really just don't question. You know, you just keep moving along.
Yeah, you mentioned you mentioned that when your family first started out, they actually started out at the time when Jehovah's Witnesses only had one hope. So basically, everybody who got baptized was going to heaven.
Right.
After the announcement was made in the 30s. Did everybody who was claiming to be of the anointed, did they continue to say, well, I think I'm still of the anointed, or did they switch over and like, I think I want to stay on earth now? I changed my mind.
No, my grandfather was cooking in the kitchen at the time. You remember when they had the big meals in the kitchen, and they, most of those people were back there most of the time. They didn't get anything out of the convention. Well, he was in the kitchen and my grandmother was out in the front in her seat. And they said, you know, how many are feeling like they're of this other class? And so my grandmother did not know until after he came at the end of the day, got done working in the kitchen. She said, well, which group are you? So he told her, yeah, of course, I'm going to heaven. She said, well, I'm not. So he, until the day he died, he didn't die till he was 105 years old. So he was an old timer, long timer. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, wow.
He changed his mind.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she never did either. No. They were not going to be in the same place, you know?
Well, that's amazing.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah. How did that play out with the way they looked at things? You know, like the way they looked at their future? Because, like, because he's going to heaven and she's going to be on the earth, you know, they didn't have the same eventuality. So if somebody predeceased somebody, they knew they weren't going to see each other. How did that play out?
You know, they didn't really talk about it. My grandfather refused to talk about being of the anointed. He refused, when you asked him the question, you know, how do you know? Yeah, he didn't want to. He was Greek. He was from Greece, so he had a really heavy accent. And he, you know, the way he spoke English, he had broken English, and you'd say, you know, how do you know? I not say. That's how he, you know, he talked, and he didn't want to talk about it. He just knew, and that was it. She didn't really say a whole lot about, you know, to us kids or anything that I remember about being upset until he died. After he died, she was, of course, very distraught, because in her mind, she'd never see him again because he went to heaven. And you know, in her mind, she was going to die and be in paradise, and he wasn't going to be with her. So that was a really hard time, because she lived with us when she did pass away. And it was hard to get her through that. When she passed away, I'm sorry, not when my grandfather passed away, but after he passed away, she moved with us. So when she passed away, she was living with us, and it was, she did go through some really hard times missing him.
Yeah, that's one of the unique teachings that Jehovah's Witnesses have about a husband is going to go to heaven or a wife is going to go to heaven, and what happens to the other person, because at that point, they're literally not together anymore. One's in heaven, one's on earth. And the same thing with the resurrection as well. When they come back, they're not married,
right?
And we sell it to people that you're going to see your husband come back, you're going to see your wife come back. But then when you look down in the fine print, you see that, oh, we really don't teach y'all going to be married. Y'all going to be best friends. Hey, how you doing? Good to see you. You know,
yeah.
that's what we actually teach on that subject.
Yes.
And
yes.
Yeah. So it's an interesting doctrine that Jehovah's Witnesses put together.
Right.
And I actually lost my first husband. My first husband was an elder. So fast forward, he passed away in 2004. And I remember that question from readers that changed, I think, not horribly, maybe 10 years ago, they changed their view on that. And we were still in. I mean, we were married. And I remember reading that where they said, well, maybe not. Maybe you will get to... No one knows if you're married, you know, when someone gets resurrected. And I can only imagine what they did to people when they read that, because I know it made me feel kind of sick, you know, that they would change such a huge doctrine and even dare to change something like that for these, you know, people that lost their mates. But yeah, it's a weird feeling, a weird belief. I never was, I never felt good about the whole resurrection thing when I did hear, oh, aren't you happy that, you know, he'll be back? No, I really wasn't. It really didn't bring me any comfort. And my grandma didn't seem really comforted, you know, either by even living in paradise or anything after my grandfather died. You know, they try to make it comforting, but I really don't know how many people are actually comforted by any of it, you know, earth, heaven, whatever, you know.
Yeah, it's a private conversation that actually takes place among a lot of witnesses, but because you can't really discuss it openly, it's often talked about quietly many times.
Yeah, right. You're afraid to even voice any kind of you know, sadness, or they almost kept you down that way, like oh yeah, you're a widow, but don't worry about it, because you know.
Yeah.
So
amazing. It's amazing.
Human feelings even pushed down with the organizational doctrine, you know?
Right.
So true. So true.
So Lori, how long had it been, like, when your first husband passed, that you met Dan and everything? How did you guys meet?
Well, this is going to sound crazy. I met him long before I met my first husband.
Oh, wow.
we met when we were teenagers in high school. And I was the bad girl that went to all the parties and dated worldly boys. And this guy was one of them. And, you know, we dated in school. And then I went up to Michigan to go to college. And he eventually ended up in the Navy. And so we went our separate ways and, you know, ended up in our separate lives with our marriages and kids and all that. And then we got married in 2009. So we got back together 30 something years, 30, almost 30 years, I guess it wasn't quite, after high school. So,
wow. Oh, amazing. It okay. Is. So you guys got a chance to like having a reunion, right?
Full circle.
Yes. So then, how does Dan, look at this religion? Cause like you're still practicing as a Jehovah's Witness when you're meeting him, correct?
Yeah, but I got disfellowshipped.
Okay.
Okay. He was a bad influence.
Bad influence, right?
Shame on you, Dan.
I know.
Bad influence,
huh?
Bad influence.
Right.
I'm just playing. So at this point, so now at how long does it take him to get on board with, you know, the Jehovah's Witness program? You want to talk about that, Dan?
All through my earlier years, I had tried out different denominations. I was never exposed really to anything else other than, there's a God and there's a hell, you know, kind of thing. And my family wasn't the strict church going crowd. They were pretty much once on Christmas Eve and once on the Easter Sunday kind of thing. Which really didn't leave a great impression to me on what religion was all about. But in the back of my mind, which is in the back of most people's mind, is you need to get on board with something, because if it is all true, you want to be on the right side of it when you die. So here I go through life trying different denominations out, and none of them ultimately ever ring true. Mostly because I'm from a scientific background and I challenge things in my head all the time. So, you know, I was fine with that. I resolved to be good with that because I was a good person. And really, when it came down to it, that's all that really mattered to me. And then back in high school, she tried to witness to me a couple times. And I would challenge it and say, yeah, let's just go out, you know, and go to the party, go, you know, whatever. But anyway, we, you know, went our separate ways, like she said. And when I got back together with her, I'd come off a bad marriage, and she had come off of the death of her husband and a little bad marriage in between, and we were both ready for each other. And I was once again ready to try a religion, like for the last time. And at that point in time, it all sounded good. The fellow that I started studying with, he was, you know, a real charismatic kind of person, young guy, and had all the, you know, the right kind of answers, you know, and it was just intriguing. And in the back of my mind, I was still always thinking that, you know, you really do need to be on board with something. And maybe it's taken this long for you to find the truth. And I gave it a shot, and I jumped into it head first and studied everything I could. And you know, there's a thing about when you really want to believe something to be true, that you can convince yourself for quite a while that it in fact is. But, you know, in the back of your mind, when things just don't ring out scientifically and then later on down the line logically, and then you start hearing about problems within the organization, I mean, all those are flags that start flying up as time unfolds. And it goes from a situation where you're studying and you're to get baptized and everything is, you know, beautiful and green and, you know, all this is just beautiful stuff. And then once you get baptized, now you're on the other side of the fence, and now you start to see what's prohibited, what you can't talk about, what things you can't ask, you know, and you can't challenge certain things. And then other things start to come in, and all of a sudden it's just not right anymore, you know? And that's kind of the path that I went down. I was all into it and gung ho when I first started studying, and, you know, I didn't take long at all before I was baptized. And then once I got baptized, that seemed like the beginning of the end.
Wow. Now, when you guys were in school and Lori would try to witness to you, you know, what did you think of the magazines and the literature? I mean, what did you think Because as you know, nobody else in your class was trying to preach to you, you know, regardless. But what did you think?
I didn't really try to place anything. I just tried to explain my beliefs.
Yeah, she did. She was really not a pushy person at all.
Or a good witness.
Or a good witness. Yeah.
Hey, but that's okay. She could count the time, though. She could count the time.
Yeah, right.
Right. Count the
time. But no, she really and truly believed what she had, you know, was the truth. And I really and truly believe that people could be good people and not need specifically a religion, so to speak, right? And so I was like, yeah, okay, you know, that's cool. It seems to make you happy and I'm happy over here, but, you know, let's date a little bit and go out, you know? And so we did kind of do all that, but no literature, you know, no, it didn't get that far. And I think she probably kind of respected that too. And I mean, I know she did because later, you know, years later we get married and we go out in service together and we were those kind of people at the door. We would not push anything. I mean, it was, in fact, it was uncomfortable enough, you know, doing it. And we certainly didn't want to be that type of a witness that would, you know, stick your foot in the door and not let them shut it and that kind of thing.
Oh, yeah. I remember those days.
That's true. When there's a lot of witnesses. They feel more comfortable right. Just using the Bible.
Yeah.
Like that. Yeah.
Exactly. So, like, when you guys were, reunited after all these years, now, Lori, were you disfellowshipped when Dan got baptized, or what state were you in when you guys got married?
Actually, no, I wasn't disfellowshipped when he got baptized. I think he kind of put that off a little bit until I got reinstated. You did. I, like he said, I went through a bad in-between marriage that did not last very long. It was with a brother, quote unquote, who was very abusive, mostly mentally and emotionally. He was a narcissist, and I got stuck in that for a little bit and left and basically ran with my kids to get out of it. And then when I moved away to another state, the elders did the old, you know, you're not scripturally free thing. I said, no, I actually do know I'm scripturally free because I knew he had cheated. I knew stuff was going on. He had been disfellowshipped like 3 times. He was a Bethelite actually at one point and he got kicked out. So he was rotten, but anyway, we're not even going to go there. I got out of that. And so then, you know, we get back together and, you know, the elders basically said, if you marry him, you will be committing adultery, which was garbage. So I didn't care, to be honest. That was really the beginning of the real end for me. But then he got baptized. And honestly, that kind of kept me in because I really had woken up a little bit after I lost my first husband from a lot of different reasons. And then he studied and I kind of felt guilty, like, okay, I don't want to not, you know, stay in. So I struggled with it. But, you know, eventually he got baptized. And so we're in together then, but I did get disfellowshipped. They would not allow me back in for quite a long time. I believe it was, gosh, I don't even remember now. I had to a year and a half.
Yeah,
I think
it was about 18 months.
Yeah. I really got, I wrote a letter and they said the letter wasn't good enough. And, you know, basically they ended up telling my grown daughter what I should write to get back in. Actually she was a teenager. I'm sorry. She wasn't grown. She wasn't an adult, but you know, told her what, tell your mom to write this basically. So I did, I just wrote the letter they wanted to hear it. The first one was from my heart. The second one, I said, whatever, I just want to get back in. And so I did. And then he continued his studies. And then within probably, I don't remember when I got reinstated, but you were baptized within, I don't know, the next convention or whatever. Next assembly. It wasn't a convention. It was an assembly, but. Or whatever they call them nowadays. I don't even know. They change it so often.
Yeah, regional conventions. Yeah.
Exactly. Wow.
I just wanted to back up just for a second because you raise an issue that is probably one of the issues that impacts people's lives pr- probably one of the deepest things in this organization. And that is the way the organization handles marriage and what is known as a scriptural divorce.
Right.
The reason I bring this up, and a lot of people are going to be watching this video is going to understand this. And so we want to make sure we bring the audience on board, because unless you have actually undergone a lot of the type of judicial things in this organization, you have no idea how they work. And the scriptural divorce thing is one of those things where the elders literally get to dangle people's lives. And the reason why is because of what you just mentioned. I have had people come to me. In fact, I have a very good friend of mine. This was something he ran into, and that was what actually started him to reevaluate things again. But this thing about this scriptural marriage, when you went to the elders and told them, according to their rules, that your spouse had been unfaithful, why do they reject your explanation? Because this is what a lot of people run into. Do they tell you why they were unwilling to accept what you said you already knew?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they told me I didn't have any proof. And I said, well, I do have proof, because I actually had a credit card bill that I could still sign into, where it showed that he had gone to a local motel right near our old house, and on several different occasions, actually. And I said, there's no reason for him to go to a hotel unless he's seeing somebody. So I already know that he's been unfaithful. And I had reason to believe that when we were still married, but they give you the old, yeah, but if you stayed with him and, you know, you forgave him and all that garbage, you're not scripturally
free. You basically were a better wife.
Yeah.
I'm talking about, like, they wouldn't even allow me to be free of him.
Right.
After the fact. You know what I mean? So
yeah. Oh, so, yeah. Oh, well, I'm very free. Yeah. We're very
free. Yeah, I know you are. So they told me that, no, you know, one elder, you know who I'm talking about, said, well, how do you know that he wasn't going to this hotel to study with somebody?
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. They will literally insult your intelligence.
What they were getting to is they wanted a two-witness rule. They wanted someone camped outside of the motel door, other than her, that seen him come out of there with a woman or something like that. So they wouldn't hear anything of it. They said basically, because, you know, it's misogynistic anyway, that they were going to do everything they could to protect his side of the story, or what they perceived to be the story, before they would believe her, you know.
Yeah. Did they even bring him in to ask him?
No.
Oh my goodness. Oh man.
No. And see, I'd moved to another state.
But I mean, they can do that through letters. Trust me, when they want to hunt you down, they can hunt you down.
No, they did not.
Wow.
And I actually, this is really interesting. You'll really like this one. When I moved, I lived in Chicago at the time. When I moved from, that's where he was, from that congregation in Chicago back to Florida again. Normally, when you get a divorce, as you know, they actually can pull your privileges and everything, because really, you know, you're leaving a marriage and you're supposed to be working things out and whatever. Not only did they not pull my privileges, but they sent a letter of recommendation with flying colors to the Florida congregation when I left him, because he was such a scumbag and a well-known womanizer up there in his past. And they knew he'd been kicked out of Bethel and everything in years past. They sent a letter of recommendation with me where I didn't lose any privileges or anything. They knew he was a scum. And then when he and I get back together, then it changes. Actually, we were in a different congregation by then. The congregation had split, so we went into a different congregation. But this new congregation still had some of the old elders in it. And so they knew that I had a good recommendation when I moved, even, because the guy was such a known, you know, womanizing cheater. And yet no one called the old congregation, didn't even try, just basically said, too bad, you can't prove it, so... You know, in fact, after we got married, because they warned me, and I married him anyway, And when I did go into the elders meeting, said, okay, well, you know, I don't know what, you know, what you're going to do with me, but, you know, we did get married. And of course, they wouldn't even let him in. I went in by myself. And one of the elders, the same elder that, you know, looks at me and says, well, you know, the only way to make this right now, don't you? I said, no. And he says, you're going to need to reconcile with your ex-husband. I said, wait. So I need to commit adultery on my husband now to go back to my other husband? And the other elders looked at him and went, hey, yeah, we're not going to, no. And then the other elder got all embarrassed, like, oh yeah, did I just say that? Yeah. I don't even know if they know what they're saying or you know what I mean? Some of them don't even think. They just, I don't know. I'll never forget that when I told him that, he was like, what? I don't know.
Yeah, that's why I wanted, as we said, that's why I wanted to tap back down on that, because this is very important that people understand that these elders all around the world who are serving as elders, they have no idea what they're doing many times.
No idea.
The problem is that they're going to make decisions that's going to impact your life. So you leave your congregation with a glowing recommendation. Everything is wonderful. You're good. And then all of a sudden, now you become the one who is bad.
Right.
And because of the elder, and this is what makes it so important to understand, if the elders were out to get you, if they were out to get you, they would be on the phone with the elders day and night in the other congregation. There'll be so many letters going back and forth. It would be funny. But yeah. Now because, I'm sorry.
No, I saw, I'm agreeing.
Yeah. But now because you need their help, they put their hands off. And this is what often starts people on that journey, because they're like, wait, this makes no sense. This makes no sense. And you're right. It doesn't.
Well, I have a question. So Dan, while all this is taking place, now you're not really a religious person before all this is going on, because you said you just went out and just visited some churches and whatnot. What's going through your mind as all this is taking place?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know, things didn't really make a whole lot of sense, but she told me that, you know, this is kind of the way it's going to play out because of, you know, the way that the marriage had ended, and, you know, we would just have to see it through. And, you know, I was still studying, so, you know, I didn't want to rock the boat. So I just kind of, you know, go with the flow, you know, and it seemed like the first time that she wrote the letter that, you know, of course I know it was from her heart, and, you know, I was like, okay, no problem here. You know, we'll be back, you know, to normal, and everything will be good. And they flat out rejected it. I barely even would hear anything of it. And so it drug out another 6 months, and then same thing. And then, you know, like she said, finally, one of the elders said, you know, she just needs to write the letter this way. So, and this guy was, mm-hmm. you know, he was, you could tell that he needed to control things. I mean, just really to every degree. So it was his decision that she was going to get disfellowshipped in the first place, and that he wouldn't believe that, you know, what she was saying about her ex was true. And then he was also going to be the one that held the keys to her fate by whether she gets back in or not, and when she gets back in, and right down to the type of letter he needed to see before he would approve it. And the other elders that were involved with it, you know, they were just occupying a chair. This guy ran the show, still does to this day, mm-hmm. in the congregation.
He's
down
a coordinator.
There. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So.
Well.
Yeah. That is a very important point. That these elders, you have to beg them the right way.
The right way. Yeah.
And if you don't beg them the right way, they will reject your letter.
Okay, but we're going to tell you a little about the same elder. Man, I wish I could name him, you guys. I really want to name him.
That's okay.
This same elder, fast forward a few years, and we're not going to mention names, but someone very, very close to us in our family was a whistleblower for a pedophile case, very big pedophile case in Florida. And this same elder, we had to beg him the opposite direction, the coordinator, because somehow he was buddies with this pedophile. And it was so bad that we went to the elders when we found out about what was going on. I had to call all the parents and tell them, you know, a story and make sure that their, you know, children weren't involved. And this same coordinator basically called me up, told me stop it, which I wouldn't, of course. And the next meeting, I think it was the very next meeting, the pedophile, who ended up getting 3 life sentences plus 60 years, said the closing prayer after we turned him in. And so you're talking about, on one hand, this guy's saying, oh, I have to have a 2 witness rule and you're not scripturally free. But then on the other hand, we're telling him we have proof. We went to the sheriff's department. We had investigation going on. And no big deal. He's not been proven guilty yet.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
there was families.
It's amazing. I mean, when you start looking at this, it's hard to believe that these are the guys who are in charge. It's very hard to believe.
And have been put there under Holy Spirit. And that's the sad part. The publishers believe that.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
And you get sucked in, because like Dan was saying, it's like you just thought, oh, this is just the way it is. And then we're going to get through this and everything. And it's almost like they have you hypnotized, you know? Oh,
absolutely.
I mean, there is no Jesus, Bible, God, Holy Spirit. This is all individual, personal preference, their own way in which they're doing it. And I mean, and the organization, and see, the thing is, the organization knows these guys are running free. They know this. They know this. They know they got renegade elders all around the world, but they're not going to put no chains.
Exactly. Now, Dan, what about your family? Like Lori, all of her family are witnesses, but now you're, you know, reconnecting with your old friend from high school, things like that. And now you're getting ready to get involved with this religion. What are your what is your family saying about that?
The only part of my family that was actually in the area where we were living was my mother. The rest of the family was in different parts of the country, so there was never any kind of communication or discussions about any, you know, how do you feel about this, or what are you doing, or any of that kind of stuff. And for a very, very short amount of time, there was a sister in the area, not in our congregation, but a next door neighboring congregation, that was calling on my mom for just a little bit of time, maybe, you know, a couple months. And, you know, she was kind of like, maybe, you know, looking back at it, she was probably having a brief Bible study with this sister, just because she knew that I was involved with it. But she really didn't get too involved with me anyway. She didn't express any kind of opinions one way or the other. And I'm just kind of like a loner. I mean, as far as family goes, my family's is really not tight.
Okay, because that's the next thing I was going to ask you. It's like, okay, so you, you know, we're not a Jehovah's Witness, and then now you can't do holidays, and you're not sending gifts anymore and stuff, birthday cards and stuff like that. So you weren't really close anyway.
No, but I mean, they weren't crazy. I mean, like, I did talk to his sister and his mom, probably more than he did, you know, because women seem to talk and communicate more. But they weren't crazy about the idea that, you know, I pulled him away from holidays and whatever. I mean, they did voice that to me, you know. They didn't like it, but they didn't, like he said, he wasn't really close with them, and they live way out west in the United States. So his mom ended up moving out that way. So we really don't stay in touch that much. They're not big communicators. So, but they weren't happy about the holidays, really. They just didn't argue with us about it, but they didn't like it.
So you guys really didn't have any outright opposition. They just found it very distasteful, the way it impacts families many times. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So then what, how did you guys end up waking up? What was the major crack in your foundation?
I think, well, like I said, for me, I doubted since I was really young, and I just kept staying in. There was just several different reasons why I kept staying in. But the big thing for us together was the whole pedophile situation. And I believe, was it the 2017 Watchtower that came out and said, this is how we handle it. This is how we handle pedophile cases. We, you know, the elders, they don't mess around. They, you know, they do this and they do that. And we looked at each other during the meeting. Well, I mean, we had studied it beforehand too, but, and we were kind of floored, but I mean, we looked at it and we, you know, during the meeting, all these comments of, you know, oh yeah, the elders, they make sure that when there's a child that's involved, and we're going, no, that's not how it's handled. And we knew this, we knew what, you know, what we'd been through. It was awful. And, so, coincidentally, my very, close friend and her family had been through the same thing. And so after the meeting, we all kind of went outside, and her and I kind of broke down a little bit emotionally. And, we all kind of took a step back. And they became inactive as well and left, about the same time we did. And we all just were floored because we'd all been through it, different states, different times of, you know, our lives and whatever, but we all knew it was not handled that way. And so that's kind of when we started there was a huge crack in the foundation. And then I started to read some of my grandparents' old books that I'd inherited out of curiosity. I started reading Russell and Rutherford, and I kept bringing them to him going, you're not going to believe this. Like, this isn't how it used to be back in the day. He didn't teach this and he didn't teach that. And, you know, we were both kind of reading this stuff going, wow, this is kind of crazy, you know? And so then the crack got bigger, even reading their own literature, the crack started getting bigger. And then before long it was, you know, Watchtowers that we were going, wait, this article does not match. Like, this scripture is not supporting this. And I look at him and I say, are you seeing this? Yeah, I am seeing that. And so we started, you know, looking, and instead of ignoring it, I think, because, like, I don't know how many times, even since we've been married, but in my lifetime that I've looked at a Watchtower or an article or whatever, where it would have a scripture that would, you know, case in point, you know, the governing body is God's spokesperson. And then they throw some stupid scripture in there and you look it up and we'd go, well, that's not what that says, you know? But everybody else at the hall is commenting while you're looking at it going, that's not what that says. And we even would joke and say, I wonder how people are going to handle this paragraph. But they all were like the Stepford wives, you know, they'd all raise their hands and say, according to, and we're kind of looking at each other like, what is going on? And so we were definitely waking up at that point. And then I read Ray Francis' Crisis of Conscience. And I realized, here I am 55 years old and I was lied to my whole life. And I, little by little, started realizing this is more serious than I thought. I was raised in a cult. I was pretty, at first I was pretty broken up about it because, you know, being fourth generation and then raising my children in it, and I have grandchildren, and but it was too late. Once I read that, and then I started getting online and we watched you and Lloyd and
John Cedars.
Yeah, Lloyd. And that was it. I mean, it was all over.
It don't take long. It does not take long. Once you allow yourself to become unafraid to look at these things, it amazes you how much is out there that you self-imposed yourself not to see. Because it's all there. It's just all there. And yet while you're on the other side of it, you know, doing what the good witness does, and not, don't look at this program, don't look at YouTube, don't watch out what you type in your search bar, you know, all that kind of stuff. Impose you to go anywhere and see these things. But once that rift is there, it just does not take long. It doesn't.
I know, Lori, I love what you said about you guys were comparing notes about how people were commenting at the Kingdom Hall, at the Watchtower study, because I think that it's like a competition who can get the best comments sometimes. And they don't really care as long as they sounding good to everybody else around them.
It's canned.
Right.
And really, I always said it was like the Stepford Wives. You remember that movie, The Stepford Wives?
Yeah.
They'd all shake their head and they raise their hand, and the things that come out, if you really start paying attention, just pay attention to the paragraphs and look at the supporting scriptures. They do not support some of these statements that are being made that are so bold. But for some reason, being in, you see that, and the little red flags go up and the alarms do go off. Mine did, but you're hearing everybody else saying that's not really what that says, or boy, that scripture supports this or that, and you're thinking, am I out of my mind? Is it just me? And then what do you think? Well, I'm not strong enough, and I need to pray more, and I need to get out and service more, because I will tell you right now, I don't care how many people are watching, right? I hated service. I hated service since the time I was this high. Absolutely hated it. It got to a point where I was on anti-anxiety medication to go out in the ministry because I could not function normally going door to door. But then you start telling yourself, maybe that's why. It's me. It's because I don't like service, and it's because I get anxious about going to meetings, or, you know, I get anxious about being up on the platform, and that's my fault. It's my fault. I'm not strong enough. I'm not this. I'm not that. And you start telling yourself that. And before long, you've convinced yourself, you know, that there's something wrong with you. And so you just kind of fall in the rank and file with everybody else, and you try to, you know, like you were saying, Lady C, you try to play like they do. You try to act like they do and give the comments like they do. And I noticed that. I mean, I was a big commenter, and I noticed that about myself, that sometimes I would comment and I would think to myself, who was that? Because it was so canned, but you got used to doing that because, like you said, it's kind of like a competition. Who sounds the most like a circuit overseer's wife is what it ended up being. And everybody was trying to sound that way. And you just did it because that was what was expected of you. I didn't really believe a lot of the things that I said out loud. And I know that sounds awful now, but when you're in it, you feel like you're supposed to do it. So you do it.
That's true.
And you made a very good point.
Yeah. And Lori, you had also said, I'm going to go back a little bit. You said that when you and Dan went off your separate ways, you said that you went off to college and he went off to go to the Navy. Did you get your four-year bachelor's degree as a Jehovah's Witness?
I did not. My dad got his fellowship when I was 10, and him and my mom got divorced, and he got remarried and had his own family, and we stayed with my mom until we got to be a certain age, and that was the age. Is after high school for me, I went and lived with my dad, and he put me through college. But I ended up moving back to my mom's within a few years. Some things happened in my own life, and I moved back to living with her, and because I was in a bad place at the time, my mom sent me up with a study. And so, you know, I started studying again. I was 20 at the time. And I did what I thought I was supposed to do to make my mom happy at the time was just get baptized. It'll be okay. It's, you know, it's better than being out in the world, because I, like I said, I had gone through some really bad times, and I thought, you know what? I need to be here. I need to be back in the truth. I need to, you know, if I just serve Jehovah and I just do this and I'll be happy. Well, it never happened. You know, I never really fully was happy. I mean, except for when I was married to my husband, who was an elder, we were happy and we had, you know, children and whatever, but I still questioned and I'd ask him things too. And he was a good guy. He was a good elder too. He'd answer me as best as he could, you know, and he never lied to me, but some things that I asked, he just didn't have the answer for. And, you know, he would kind of laugh at me because I was kind of the unruly, you know, I don't want to say I was rebellious about things, but I always questioned a lot of things, especially to him, because I really didn't, things just didn't gel right for me. And I never really did get answers. But no, to go back to your question, no, I did not finish college. I did go almost 2 years and then I quit, which I wish I went, no, but I did. So I did not get a degree. I was shy of getting an associate's degree, but.
But you still had more credits than we had when we left, though, so you at least could go back and, you know, like, bring those into the system.
Yeah, you can. And actually, yeah. One of the big things that I was really interested in college is psychology. And once you start studying about psychology, you do know that, I mean, when you're being brainwashed, it's a little more difficult to get somebody that's studying that, you know, in school to really fully believe it. So it really took me being in a bad place in my life to even agree to studying again at that age, you know, at 20 years old and then getting baptized. And I will have to say I truly did not 100% feel right about it. But again, it was a limiting belief on my part to continue to say there's something wrong with me. It's not the organization. It's me. I keep doing these things that I'm not supposed to do. And so that's why I'm not strong. And, you know, then it was, oh, I married an elder. Now I'm going to be strong. Now I'm going to love service. Now I'm going to love meetings. No, it never changed. But I was too afraid to tell anybody that. You know, you keep saying that you're okay, you're happy, everything's fine inside, because what happens if you don't? What happens if you tell the truth and you say, you know, this really stinks. I hate service. I hate meetings. I mean, people would lose their mind. You know, you'd already be shunned. I mean, you just play the game is what I used to say. You playing the game. And that's what I did.
One of the successful strategies of high control groups would, I mean, pick your group. It doesn't have to necessarily be the witnesses. It could be any of the ones that we've heard about recent history, NXIVM, Scientology, and you can go back to the Moonies. I mean, any of them, it's, you know, by the number and frequency of the meetings, you are encouraged to work on yourself when no one's mm-hmm. watching. And then when you get around all the other folks that are in the same cult, they work on you as well. So, you know, you truly do convince yourself that if you're not in with the program or you're missing something or you're having errant thoughts, that there is something wrong with you. And there's more than enough people around you to tell you that, yes, in fact, there is something wrong with you. So.
Yeah. The guilt tripping is very, very powerful. Lori, you made the point that you started reading some of the older publications of the organization. And I think that's so important that people understand. We were told not to read apostate material. And what ends up happening is you read the Watchtower's own material, and that many times end up as a result leading people right back out the door, because after a while you begin to put the pieces together and you realize this is crazy. I think one of the things about this organization is our service or our worship was very robotic. There are lots of people who belong to different denominations, different churches, and they enjoy their worship services. I mean, they enjoy. I mean, we know people, they have a good time. They enjoy it. You ain't never heard no Joe Biden say that, generally speaking. I mean, they just waiting for the meeting to get over so I can go home and leave. And the reason why is because our meetings are so robotic. I'll give you a perfect example. You go back with us. At one time, the organization used to allow brothers and sisters who had musical skills to play in their little orchestra down front. That was their little contribution to it. And what happened is one brother, one conductor, he decided to put a little spice in the music, you know, put a little spice in the music. And man, the society heard about that and they just snatched it. And next thing you know, we went back to music on the little CDs. And I remember so many witnesses who they were violinists. They played the harp, piano, gone. So everything in the organization is very, very robotic. And when that's all you let your people do is operate in a robotic way, after a while, people get bored. It doesn't hold their attention anymore. And that's really what we're seeing now. Oh, my goodness. That's really what we're seeing now.
Right. Now, Lori, I don't know if we touched on this or not, but your father was a Jehovah's Witness as well. And he left the religion. Did he say why he left? Did you talk about that already?
No, I didn't actually. Yeah, my dad was actually they were called the congregation servant before they even had elders. And I think he left over the 1975 thing. I was 10 and he didn't really talk to me too much about it at that point because I was a kid. But later on when I got older and we did talk about things, that was one of the things was, you know, he would tell me, you know, look, the end's been coming since I was a kid, you know, him talking to me. And he used to go downtown, I don't know if it was Detroit or downtown Toledo. I can't remember which one it was, but he had the old, you know, what do you call them? Placards.
Or whatever. Placards.
Yeah. He would stand out there and he told me that he was horrified. He said when he was little, you know, the kids would walk by and make fun of him. And it worked on him. And so once he realized that there's no Armageddon, you know, he decided in 1975, I'm done. Like, I'm not going to do this anymore. And he ended up committing adultery on my mom. And, you know, they got divorced and then he got remarried. And he didn't talk against it really much. He did eventually when I got much older, but he didn't really say a whole lot to, you know, to sway my sister and I one way or the other. Back when we were growing up, he would take us to the meetings when he'd have visitation. We'd stay the summer with him and he'd take us every Sunday, even though we didn't even want to go. But, he told my mom he would. So he didn't really talk against it, but he definitely was never going back. And I wish I would have left with him when I was young, because I had the chance several times, because I know he would have supported me. But again, you know, I always felt that guilt and I stayed in for the rest of the family that was in.
Yeah, that's interesting, Lori, because what was probably taking place with your dad is he really didn't have a confirmation that this actually wasn't the truth.
Yep.
He just knew he didn't want it.
Right.
And that happens to a lot of people. You know, that's why they don't really say anything, because they really don't know what to say.
Exactly. Yeah. A lot of people, they stop being involved with the organization for years, sometimes decades, but they really don't know what they were a part of. Because once you know what you're a part of, your entire view changes. Like with your dad left in 76. That meant he had no way of getting, as Lacey mentioned, a confirmation. What we have today, they didn't have. So a lot of people just left the organization and just went on, you know, just bowed their head and just went on back their own, went on about their little self, by themselves. But today people can find out, hold on, you mean y'all think the same thing I think? Yeah, we ran the same thing you're running into. And all of a sudden it changes it. Whenever you find other people who are going through the same thing that you're going through, it changes the dynamics. You've been in line waiting to get service. And all of a sudden everybody, what number y'all got? Y'all got number 7. Everybody got number 7. What's going on? Why we all got number 7? All of a sudden it changes. It changes. And right. So that's the way it is now. People realize when this is not the truth, they get all the pieces that go along with it. And that's really what the game changer has been today. Today, you can get all the pieces of the puzzle. You just got to be willing to put it together.
That's right. And I know, Lori, we didn't mention yet that you, when you left, I think you were already doing this, your life coach.
Actually, I was not.
You weren't? Oh, okay.
Because we kind of stopped. We stopped really. We were PMO for a while. So physically still in, having to hook up to Zoom meetings. But, you know, mentally we were out. And then we left it's been over a year now that we stopped going to the meetings. And I got involved at that point with life coaching to help others that are trying to wake up. And I also started my YouTube channel. And one of the big reasons was because I have a really good friend that I've been friends with for a long time, 30 some years. And she left like 22, 23, 24 years ago, whatever it was. And when I called her to tell her that, you know, I woke up and she was thrilled to death, but she was still stuck in the same place she was right after she was disfellowshipped. She'd never, you know, reached out to look at anything or figure anything out. She just kind of, like you were saying, JT, you just kind of hang your head low and just kind of don't go anywhere with it. And I was floored about how she was still mentally so tied to it because of the fear and the limiting beliefs and everything she still thought about herself. And so I decided to start my channel and also then to get into life coaching. And that is what I do, is help people to get past those awful limiting beliefs that we have coming out of the organization. Because like we were been talking about this whole time, you know, we're constantly doubting our own intuition, constantly refusing to use our own critical thinking that we are born with. And that's really hard when you've been indoctrinated for so long to change that. So that's what I do. I work with people to get them past that, basically uninstall all that old thinking and install something new that helps you moving forward with your life to grow and not be stuck, you know, back in the same situation that you are when you leave the organization. So yeah, I've been doing that for this last year. I absolutely love it. I love my work, love my clients. It's amazing work. It's awesome to see people, you know, the light switch go on and people realize that they're going to be okay. So yeah, I love it.
So how can people find you online? What's your channel?
Okay. So my channel is still, Maritza Chero. I'm sure you'll drop it
I'll just wait on the screen.
And then my life coaching is LoriKleinLifeCoaching.com. And then from there, you know, you'll get my Facebook page and my contact info and email and all that kind of stuff to contact me. So, I do love talking to people. I know I get a lot of email now, especially after being on Lloyd's show too, of, oh my goodness, I had one lady that was like 81, 82 years old. Remember that lady? And I mean, I was, because that's my mom's age. Yeah. And she woke up recently. Yeah. I'm like, that gives me so much hope because my mom doesn't have anything to do with me now. My mom's 81. And I, you know, so yeah, it's amazing. I mean, waking up at that age, I mean, and she was in a long, long time, like 60 some years. So, I mean, you know, I'm telling everybody watching, if this sweet lady at 81, 82 years old can wake up, I mean, don't be afraid. You know, she knew what she knew.
Hey, look, I'm going to tell you right now, we've had people 21 years old. I said this before in another video, episode, and they were like, my life is over. I'm 21. And I was like, oh, my God, please. Do you realize?
To be 21. Oh.
I know, right? No.
Exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
But it's just where people are. You know, because they're looking at, like, they wanted to go to college at 18.
Oh, sure.
And now, you know, so they're looking at where they are specifically.
Yeah. Well, I will say, though, that I do understand that thinking because, you know, when, like, for me, you know, I was 55 years old. So all of a sudden, I mean, I guess it doesn't matter. You know, wherever you're at, when you wake up, you do realize that I lost this many years. Mm-hmm. And for me, I lost 55 years, but I don't look at it that way anymore. I feel like I gained a lot of education in life. And that's the only way that I would be able to help people the way I am now, is all the experience that I've had. And how did I wake up and how did I get out of it? And I've done the same things that I do with my clients. I've I have my own life coach. So I've already gone through all these modalities and I've undone all the negative, you know, emotions and limiting beliefs myself after 55 years. So if I can do that, you know, I know that I can help other people do it. And I give people, even telling them my story, you know, well, wow, if at 55 years old, you could wake up and you could really be happy with life. Cause I'm happy. Like we are happy in our lives and we really don't do anything different. You know, we don't go anywhere. It's not like we left the organization so we could go party or do anything crazy. We
no swinging from the ceilings and stuff. I know.
No swinging from the ceilings. We're too old. If I tried that, you would see me in some kind of cast in the hospital bed for. We just have a very peaceful, very calm. Kind of boring life, really.
Yeah. That's the lie they tell about us in terms of those who leave, that you will leave this organization and you will just indulge in wickedness, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And, you know, and you look around, I look around all the former witnesses we know and we hang with. We're like, man, we're doing the same stuff we're doing before. Come on.
They try to demonize you when you leave. And
they
what they try to do is they try to instill fear in other people.
Absolutely.
And that's what kind of keeps people in.
Yeah, that's a great point.
They don't know what to do if they do run into you and you tell them the truth that, look, I'm doing good. I'm doing great.
Yeah.
Oh no, you can't be doing great. Because the Watchtower says that every time you leave, either you are going to be a bum underneath a bridge somewhere.
That's right.
Drug addict. Or, you know, you're going to get pregnant and have, you know, 17 kids out of wedlock.
That's
or
exactly
you're
going to
get AIDS. Or, and when they run into you and you're going, you know what? And they realize, wow, she looks better. Because I was very depressed and anxious. So people know I'm doing a ton better. You know, they don't know what to do with that. They just don't know what to do with it.
It is
very confusing. People who you meet who are still in and they see you. You become very confusing to them because you don't fit any of the boxes that they were told to check off about people who leave you. I mean, you literally don't fit any.
None.
And that is very frustrating and it's very confusing because we've ran into people before and they're like, y'all look like y'all happy. And Lady C got me and she got one and she you need to leave those folks alone. I was like, man, like you tired, man. Like you wore out, man.
Yeah, they do. Yeah. They do. They're still drinking themselves to sleep at night.
I know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, we're just happy to just wake up every day and live our lives, and we're just content. You know, it's sad though.
Let me ask both of you this question. As you guys look at what's happening now in the organization, I mean, the organization is now actually it's morphing.
Yeah.
What do you think it's going to be like down the road to be one of Jehovah's Witnesses?
Oh, to be one of Jehovah's Witnesses?
Yeah. For those who are still in, yeah.
Well, I think they're tightening the reins.
Yeah.
We used to have, as you guys know, being in for a long time. And I was trying to tell him this. It was different when I was young, and it was different even as a young adult for me. We weren't policed as bad as they're policing them now.
Yes.
You know, they're not allowed to do anything.
Yeah.
Just like we're not disfellowshipped. Neither one of us. We've not had any elders meetings. They've not come after us. And yet my entire family blocked and deleted me on social media overnight.
Oh, yeah.
Like
oh,
I
oh yeah. Oh yeah. It's swift.
They were all gone. And my mom won't talk to me. I'm not allowed to see my 5-year-old grandson. And my daughter won't have anything to do with me. And my sister doesn't have anything to do with me. So, I mean, I believe, we're not going to the meetings, but I really feel like now they're tightening those reins. They're telling, you know, if you're even speaking to people that are not loyal to Jehovah, then by association, you're going to be disloyal. And they're afraid, I feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's just going to get worse because I think with this pandemic, I think so many people have kind of dropped off, you know, from really being involved. And I know they know that because the donations, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. They know.
Yeah. Sure. So we're going to try to keep as many people in as they possibly can. And in order to do that, it's going to get tougher. It's going to get harder on people just to stay in.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to have a hard time also. Right now is a big, I think, is a big uncertain period for the organization because of the staggering amount of lawsuits that are being resolved. And you can only imagine the ones that are in the pipe coming up. So, and then the pandemic has driven everybody into a Zoom atmosphere where, yeah, you're kind of being indoctrinated, but you're not in the hall. So there's a lack of the direct control. It's got to be over the airwaves, so to speak, or the e-waves. So depending on what happens with this child sex abuse thing with that's rampant in the organization, it may pull it in a certain direction where they're going to be forced to do some, I'm afraid, some pretty drastic measures in trying to hold the whole thing together. It might become an e-church, an e-religion kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. I really don't know. There is a lot of uncertainty there, though, with this big cloud that's holding over their heads.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that has made this organization work and work so well is this undying loyalty of its members. Mm-hmm. They'll do whatever they're told. Mm-hmm. I cannot imagine having any organization and you're walking around knowing that you got people in this meeting or in this hall. They don't even want to be here. They don't think nothing of you. And so you have this undercurrent. That has got to be the worst thing for any high control group to know, that within their ranks, they have people who absolutely do not want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I think it's getting worse. I think I think the numbers are growing for that.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. They don't want to be there.
All right, so we're coming up on an hour. We passed an hour, but okay. Can I just get some closing? Do you have anything that you want to close with? Maybe that you want to give a takeaway for your interviews for our listening audience?
Well, you know what? I want to go back to what you said about the 21-year-old who basically said, you know, my life is over. And I look back at myself at that age, and I know I could have walked away at that point. And actually before that, and I spent a lot of time questioning myself. So I guess I would have to say that if you're questioning things, that's great. You should question things. And then, you know, thus the name of your channel, you should be a critical thinker. And if you're watching this channel, you're obviously questioning it. Don't listen to what everybody else tells you that you should be thinking. Don't doubt that. You know, we all have an intuition. It's called a gut instinct. We know when the red flags are up. I did, but I ignored them. And had I not ignored them, I could have been that 21-year-old that would have been out for a long time. Now, like I said, I look at it as a life experience, and I can't even say I regret it because of where I am now. I'm happy where I am now, and I'm helping other people, which I'm very grateful for that. But I'm just saying, if you are questioning it, don't stay in it and keep telling yourself you're wrong. Just keep looking. Question everything. Keep going.
Yeah, that's the most important thing is like she said, is if you're tuned into this channel right now, you're already questioning something. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here. And that very part of your mind that has been shut down through indoctrination is trying to poke its head up and discover some things that you know deep down inside that your conscience is telling you, and you should be true to that, because we are all endowed with that questioning and that seeking of the truth. And what if it's not ringing true with you? Don't let someone tell you that it is the truth and how it's supposed to fit together and how you should be able to connect the dots and all that. You shouldn't have to do that. It should not be a mental exercise to make this work. It should be true. People should not be afraid to not answer your questions, because the truth will be the truth. You know, all them things are for me, those were the kind of flags that were going up around me. And if you're watching this program, you know, you're many steps ahead to getting a freedom like you wouldn't imagine.
Yeah, those are just excellent points. I mean, you have, as they say, you have knocked it out of the park. Yeah, great points. Great points.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, yeah, we really, really appreciate it. This has been such a great discussion.
Yeah.
I think a lot of people can probably resonate with probably like 99.9% of what you said.
Yeah.
You know, and I really am looking forward to hearing the comments in the comment section below. And I'm sure we'll get a lot of people dialoguing about what you've said. And your story was just very, very interesting. And we're just happy that you were able to come on our channel and
thank you so much
share this experience.
Yeah. Thanks for having us. Yes, it's been awesome. Yeah.
Yes, you're welcome. So anyway, so this has been Lady C.
And this has been JT.
And we'll see you all on the next episode. Hey, this is Lady C. Thank you for tuning in to The Critical Thought. We appreciate having you in our audience. Not only that, but we invite you to subscribe to our channel and be sure to hit that bell so that you can receive notifications when we upload new content. Be sure to follow us on Facebook and Twitter and give us a thumbs up if you like this video. Thank you for being in our audience.
This program was sponsored by Critical Thinkers.